and thank you all for tuning in to our gender panel. Over the past few terms, the URI speech team created a gender documentary in which we investigated the role of gender identity in our society. Our aim was to raise awareness about gender identity and to address related topics such as representation of gender in the media, politics and law, as well as looking at the history of gender and personal perspectives from students. Georgie Norgate interviewed a variety of people to learn about their personal experience with gender and some issues they have come across as a result of their gender identity. After the documentary aired, we decided to have a panel to discuss some of the questions that the documentary raised. I am your host, Beth Whiffen, and I prefer female pronouns, she or her, and today I am joined by...
So my name is Kit Taylor, I go by the pronouns they, them.
Hello, I'm Alex Palmer, my pronouns are he, him, his.
I'm Jack Fellows, and my pronouns are they, them.
Okay, so thank you all for coming today to discuss this. One of the sort of main topics we were discussing in the documentary was sort of drag and its relation to gender. So first of all, how does cross-dressing help identity? And do you think it takes away the seriousness of transgender dysphoria or highlights an issue?
I personally think it's a matter of whatever helps you feel more you. I don't personally, but if that makes people feel more comfortable in themselves or exploring sides of themselves, it's up to them, really. It's whatever will make them feel comfortable in their skin and more confident overall, I think. That's what I think about it anyway.
There are a few different opinions on this, as there always are. In terms of like drag as in overexpression and amplification of a gender identity, for example, drag queens, drag kings, drag person, drag personalities, I like to think that people will do it for a couple of reasons. One, a bit of fun. Like, if you enjoy doing it and aren't hurting anyone by doing it, then good. However, it's when people get the wrong end of the stick and think that drag is another side of being trans, because doing drag is not really, I wouldn't say it's being trans, but that's my humble opinion. I say drag is a performance, but if you're questioning your gender, then it's more serious and affects a lot. It affects your daily life, and it's not really limited to a performance.
Yeah, because I think when we were sort of discussing the documentary, one of the points that was raised was sort of, could drag portray the wrong image of a transgender understanding? And like, can it create this image that people are sort of dressing up?
I think that's a danger of it. So as much as self-expression is a good thing in my mind, I think when it does collide with the idea of, if someone says, okay, I'm questioning my gender identity, and if someone then assumes, oh, you're going to go cross-dressing or something, I think that could be dangerous to the original person who is questioning, because if that's been assumed of you and that then makes you feel uncomfortable, that could be a potential danger there. But I think we are working on transgender awareness, and I think that's getting better, from my understanding. I think we're learning to separate this whole idea of drag as a performance and transgender understanding. Mm. But what do you make of that?
I mean, I would agree that drag is a performance and it's not the same thing as being trans, very obviously. Like, you can be trans and do drag, and you can be trans and not do drag, and you can do drag and not be trans, and all of those things are fine. But there is the idea that a man in a dress is a punchline to a joke, which is a terrible thing. Like, the idea that drag queens are the same as trans women, or even sometimes get confused for trans men because awareness is not that great in some places. But the conflation of gender play and gender performance with gender identity can be quite a serious problem, and it can lead to some really nasty, particularly nasty transmisogynistic violence, because, you know, if a trans woman is, in inverted commas, found out, then she's in huge amounts of danger. Like, it's not the case that drag is portraying the wrong image of trans understanding. It's that they're essentially nothing to do with each other, but they get conflated all the time, which is a real problem.
I say drag is something that you do, and gender questioning is something that you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's all coming back to that idea that people should do what they're comfortable with, whether that is doing drag, whether it's not. And I think that's sort of coming back to this idea of just, like, being comfortable in your own skin. And I think a way to do that is sort of going back to the start, where... So I think I want to discuss gender dysphoria, which is something that was such a prominent issue in the documentary. So I think I'll start with, how has gender dysphoria affected all of you?
Personally, I feel like I did have a lack of understanding that it wasn't, that there isn't a binary gender scheme. I feel like there was a massive lack in education of that, and I think that really affected me when it got to a point. I mean, there wasn't a switch on moment where I was like, right, I'm not female in my understanding. It's more of a thing of, I grew up knowing that I didn't like it when my family said, oh, you don't look girly enough, you need to wear more dresses, kind of thing. And I'm not saying it's all about how you, what you wear. But there was a massive stigma around the fact that I didn't want to behave in a way that I was being told to, because of my gender, because of like what I am biologically, kind of thing. And I really feel that the lack in education meant I felt so uncomfortable for a very long time, because I just didn't like the term she. It really bugged me, and I didn't know why. I didn't know the reason behind it, but it just really got under my skin. And then when I did learn that there is such a thing as non-binary-ness, that's a term now,
yeah.
I was like, right, actually, that's made me feel so much more comfortable, because I'm not being... It's not being assumed that I'm she, her, and I can just be... I can be me.
The whole concept of biological sex is kind of not really that useful, to be honest, because there are multiple things that influence it, like what chromosomes you have, what levels of hormones you have, a myriad of conditions that you may or may not have experienced. And to say that there is a neat dividing line between biologically male and biologically female is just not biologically accurate, to be quite honest. There are so many variations within the binary genders that society uses that it's not really that useful to talk in terms of biologically male or female.
Because people conflate the idea of sex and gender. I don't know why. I think mainly because back in there, people were scared of the word sex. And to describe your sex as like a set of characteristics which are exhibited in your phenotype, which you can pick one thing and try and draw a correlation from that. But when people conflated gender and sex, it's just like opened a whole can of worms. Because that's where male, female comes from. Like, they've picked two things which might be different between two people. I mean, that's like, we're gonna say. But yeah, you have, as Alex was saying, so many different processes.
And I think it's important as well, because like, this whole idea has been taboo for so long. People weren't discussing it openly. And I think Do you think that's sort of changed over the past few years, or do you think it's still sort of stuck in the ways it was and hasn't really developed as it needs to?
In the younger population, it's getting so much better, so much quicker, because I think, you know, lol, interwebs, because people can talk who have had the same or similar issues. People can put out their thoughts on social media. However, when it gets to the people who are running systems, so I'm going to have a bit of a whinge, because I always get this. How many other... It was the wrong way around today. Well, wrong way around, different way around. People, for some reason, like on application forms, think it's really, really, really important to know what sex you are. So, for example, I'm applying for teacher training, all right? And they apparently need to know what sex I am. So they gave me my title of MUX, which is the non-binary title, or the gender-neutral title. They allowed that, no problem. But they was like, yeah, what gender are you, male or female? I was like, I rang them up. And they're like, sorry, pick one. I'm like, right, thanks.
That's a good point. It's when it's on unnecessary forms. Yeah, and I'm like, as if that makes me better or worse at a BuzzFeed quiz, whether I'm male or female. Like, yeah. It's the unnecessary things that it does get on my nerves, because it's trying to put you in a box again, and I'm like, I thought society had gone beyond this, guys. Just at least give me an other box or something else. I don't mind, just something other than the two options.
Yeah. One of the things that's being discussed in several places at the moment, including the UK, is including an X marker on passports, yes, for people who are non-binary, which, you know, great, good, more power to somebody who wants that on their passport, but also, is it really necessary
to have it in the first place?
Like, do you really need to know what I was assigned at birth in order to let me travel from place to place? Like, surely my name and age and photograph are all far more important than something probably based on presentation. Like, it literally does not matter.
That might be more with regard to identification, though. As much as I don't want to admit it, it pains me to admit it, but it might be when they make you out, wait outside a club and they put up the picture and they go, right, you, and that's all they know in that moment.
Yeah.
But equally, I get why it's not entirely necessary.
Equally, if it was based on identification, then surely you would just be able to change it based on presentation, and then you can't. If you want to change your gender marker in the UK, then you need to have a letter from at least two doctors, one of whom has to be working in a gender identity clinic, in order to get a value changed on your passport.
Just to make sure.
Which is really stupid.
Make sure you're trans enough.
Yeah, it's medical gatekeeping.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think that whole idea of sort of classification of people and sort of when you're having other people tell you when it's okay to identify with your gender, and I think that's something that we did talk about a lot when we were interviewing people, and they said it's unnecessary and it's unfair that I need to get documentation from people just to identify myself the way I want to. So I think in terms of that as well, is it important to have people to sort of look up to and set an example and to say, you know, these are some of the issues I faced and this is how I got through it, and just sort of have someone you can identify with, especially in media and a very sort of public person?
I think that's definitely important. I think, personally, I learned a lot from the previous LGBTQ officer, Jazz. And especially as we're saying with trying to get the idea of it not just being binary genders more or better educated, I think having people in the media, like especially if it's people like YouTubers, right? Do you know Alex Bertie?
I don't know of him, but I've never watched any
of
his stuff.
So, Alex Bertie is a YouTuber who has kind of made YouTube videos throughout his transition. And I know a lot of people who have found a lot of support in that. And I think that's very important, especially for our generation, because we love all things YouTube and internet and all that. So if we can find comfort in that, and if we can find someone that we identify with, or who you kind of look at and you think, okay, that makes sense to me. That's a concept that I think agrees with me, or something along those lines. I think that's particularly important in making you feel happy about yourself and happy about kind of, I don't know, if you want to begin a transition or change your name or something like that. I think that could be a step forward in helping you to feel happier to do that.
Yeah. In similar vein, a while back on Twitter, there was a hashtag called, which was hashtag real life trans adult, which was essentially because a lot of the trans representation that you do get, if you get it at all, is either of young people who are struggling with their gender identity and struggling with coming out, more on that later, or it's just, it's like throwaway one-dimensional characters that you never really get a chance to learn more about. So the point of this hashtag was for people to like post a selfie and like a little comment of, hey, I'm here, I'm, I don't know, 29 and working in a bookstore, it gets better, real life trans adult. Like, life will not always be being 17 and just told everyone that you want to go by a different name and different pronouns and never, ever, ever getting read as the gender that you actually identify as. Like, it does get better, which was really, really nice to see when I was 17 and had just come out and was constantly getting misgendered because it sucked.
I don't think I've ever had too many role models, so to speak. I would say definitely Jazz. Wave down to Cardiff to you, Jazz. But apart from that, a few close friends, but nothing national. I really wouldn't say anything national or anything international because I don't internet very well. So I never really had anyone like wider afield to look up to. So that was really local field. Really, I did look up to and supported me. But then first couple of days of like, right, I'm going to try this. I told my housemate, I was like, right, I'm going to try this, see how it goes. Happened to be the first day of a new job. So I was like, can you put mux, please? I'm like, you know, use they, them. That'd be really nice. And had such a lucky experience. And they're like, yeah, okay. And I was like, Christ, I was expecting a really big struggle. But no, they just didn't care. And I was like, this is amazing. This is a brilliant start. And definitely since then, I've felt a lot better. Presenting.
So in terms of that, do you think people have just become more accepting of non-binary now? It's sort of getting to the stage where it's like no one questions it and you just say, these are the pronouns, and then that's it. That's all you have to say.
There's a difference between not questioning it. When you say not questioning it, you could split it into two things. It could be not questioning it as in, yep, I get this. Yeah, this is amazing. Yeah, cool, go for it. You be you. And then I'm just going to ignore it and hope it goes away. I've had that before, and then people just like, no, you're just using the wrong pronoun. I told them, like, straight to their face, I do not use that pronoun, I use they. And can you not assign me with these certain stereotypes? Like, I don't know why people think I'm, like, I'd appreciate... I mean, if everyone just looked at me and was like, yes, you know, one of those lad bants people. Yeah, exactly. So I don't know why people think that. Like, that's not even my personality, let alone some kind of arbitrary box that you're trying to shove me into.
I think I've been really lucky with people accepting my pronouns. Because it's something I kind of rolled out more when I started university. And people haven't questioned it with me. I think there's a few situations of people not really understanding, but I think that's a situation of, okay, if you want to understand better, I can kind of help you. I can tell you what it's like to be me, kind of thing. But the majority of the response I've had has been amazing and has been so confidence boosting, especially from the societies I'm involved with. But that did surprise me how accepting people were. I think there are a few instances, so with my housemates, bless them, they still use she, her. I can tell them as many times as I want to, they're still going to use she, her.
Set a fine.
Like a swear jar.
Yeah, like a cuss jar.
Oh, I'm going to do that. but I think it's a process, it's a slow process, but it's a steady one. And it's a progressive one, nonetheless.
Yep, sorry, Kirsty's housemates, that's my fault. Like a misgender jug.
Just in terms of peers then, how can they sort of help in discovering gender identity?
Can I jump in with a story that's essentially how I figured out that I'm not cis? I'm a walking stereotype and I have a Tumblr. And I've followed a load of people that I knew from school and through that found somebody else who at the time I didn't know who they were, and they were talking a lot about trans stuff in terms of social issues but also in terms of their own personal journey of discovering their identity. And essentially they were talking about how it feels to figure out that you're a trans guy. And after a couple of months of reading these occasional posts, it was kind of like a light bulb going on over my head. It was like, ah, this is why my skin has just been crawling since the start of puberty, because I've essentially just gone through the wrong one. And it sucks. It really sucks. But I later found out that this person was somebody that I knew in real life. It was they were the sibling of one of my best friends. And we kind of, I don't know, bonded over that, and like we've kind of been supporting each other ever since, which is really, really nice and really unexpected to find someone else who's going through exactly the same thing as you, particularly where I come from.
I think that can really be a help when you do find someone who understands how you've been feeling, especially when it's not common. I think it makes you feel so much more at ease. Because when all this is going around in your head, when you're on your own, you can think the most ridiculous of things like, oh gosh, what am I, kind of thing? What's going on? Especially, remember, like the whole thing, like when you're going through puberty, and you're like, something's not right here. And it's not just puberty.
Yeah.
Like
it's just like, oh God, what is happening? No,
yeah.
Jesus Christ, no.
Stop! But yeah, something just feels slightly off. And I think when someone else has the same feeling as you, has the same thought as you, it's a eureka moment, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, everyone, puberty is a definite, not exactly hot topic, but that's when people tend to think, ah, no, okay, no, this is not a good. But I was always so focused on education. This sounds really nerdy and really sad, but I literally had to go into school, get my A-levels, come out of school, go to university. I didn't have time to think about me as a human very much. And then this year off was like, sugar. Yeah, okay, thinky times. But then I think I remember saying to some friends back in like my second year, like 2015, I mean, I've never really felt completely like comfortable with the gender I used to identify with. Like, I used to mess around with it. I just never felt extremely comfortable. Like, when people said, oh, you need to be like this, you need to fit into that box. It's like, nah, just ignore that. I didn't really fit. I'd never fit in that box. And then this year of actually, you know, just having the ability to think and work your way through it. And finding out that there are actually non-binary genders, which are great, because I remember saying to a crisis person from your hospital, was like, I'm not trans. I don't feel, you know, I don't feel womanly, or I don't feel in this particular way. I don't feel either attraction to or like affinity with any particular binary gender. Okay, you don't need to do binary genders. This is interesting. I might try this. So I did. There you go, that's the end of that story.
Yay.
I know. So I think I might move on a little bit to talk about sort of transition and sort of transition surgery. So I think the first question I'll ask is sort of, do you think for some people is surgery necessary? And like, just sort of what's your thoughts on that as a whole?
Yes. There you go. That's my answer as somebody who threw up 4 times in 1 day after having top surgery.
Gosh. You okay what? Now?
I mean, I'm fine. And, like, I healed up super fast and was off pain relief within, like, 3 days, which was great. But, yeah, for some people, surgery is
a must.
Definitely necessary.
I think it depends entirely on the person.
Yeah, like... Yeah, for me, it was an absolute necessity, and it was something that I'd been hoping for probably about 3 or 4 years by the time I got to the point of having surgery. So, like, as soon as I got home, it was like a weight had been lifted off my shoulders. You know, the feeling of relief after that surgery was incredible. But that's not for everyone, and that's completely fine. And like, it's not my place to judge somebody who doesn't want any kind of medical transition at all. It's not my place to stand here and say, oh, you're not trans enough.
Yeah, it's completely not necessary. It's all about what you can do and what you feel comfortable doing to make yourself feel comfortable. So... following comfort to achieve comfort.
Yeah, it's about what an individual needs, and it's not for anybody else to say what that should be. There is no one true trans path. It's not like you have to climb a mountain and drink the sacred tran water.
The golden tran.
Yeah, I think, to reiterate, it depends on what makes the person feel most comfortable. I think it should be an option that's available. I think... obviously, I don't know how much medical support you got and how well the kind of doctors discussed everything with you and how fast the process was. But I do think it should be available because it's something that's going to make a lot of lives better. But at the same time, I do think... so you said you waited 3.5 to 4 years.
Like, between that first light bulb moment of, oh, God, I'm not cis, and... actually having the surgery was, yeah, probably almost 4 years, closer to 4 years than three.
Yeah, so that's one thing that I do have a bit of a hesitation on, because I worry that if, obviously it's going to be amazing if transition surgery does become more easily available for those who feel like that they need it. I just don't want it to be the case of people making spark decisions, because I know personally, and looking back, it was an odd time when I was deciding, right, okay, so I'm not female, but what am I? And I genuinely did dabble, do I want to identify as male? And I was sat in a creative writing class going, What would my name be?
There's a difference between having a spark decision and going, yes, 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 and then next day you're rolling into theatre. Like, that's not going to happen. Like, routine surgeries, that does not happen. There's almost always some sort of waiting list. And I think the waiting list of any surgery or any changes to anyone's body is important for people to have a think. Like, there's always a consent form that you sign. Like, are you comfy with this? And they would have asked you that, like, 6 or 7 times before you have any sort of surgery. I suppose it's getting the balance right between availability and you're not waiting too long. So if you are waiting too long, then it can have negative effects. But if it's too quick, then not exactly people make the wrong decision, because people might make a decision which at the time would be perfect. It would solve a lot of problems, but 2 or 3 years later might have some mild regrets or even major regret. But having the time to think is really important, but it does need to be a bit quicker than it is at the moment.
Yeah.
I would concur with that. The horrible truth is, the waiting times are too long, and we know that because people are literally dying while they're on the waiting list. Mm-hmm. People are committing suicide because things get so bad that they can't keep going. And when that is happening, you've got to try and do something to make things better. Waiting times to see gender identity clinics, if you do want medical transition in the UK, are over a year, whichever clinic you want to go to. And people are dying on the waiting list for clinics, on the waiting list for hormones, on the waiting list for surgeries. I agree that there needs to be a balance, because you don't want people to regret what they do. But at the moment, that balance is way too far over to let's make sure people don't do something they regret, which is admirable, but it's having some very serious unintended consequences.
Would there or could there be a form of counselling put in while you're on the waiting list? Or is there anything like that at all? Because
I don't believe there's anything like it. I know that in order to start hormones, you have to have a meeting with two doctors, and the two meetings have to be at least 3 months apart. They've both got to be gender identity specialists, and they've both got to agree to recommend you for hormones. So that's meeting two different people in a clinic that's probably some considerable distance from where you live, 3 months apart, in order to get hormones, when you've already waited probably between a year and 18 months to see the first doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So far as I know, there isn't any kind of counselling for people while they're on the waiting list. In my opinion, there should be, but there isn't.
However, if people are lucky enough to get onto NHS mental health care, they put you down pathways. I don't know if anyone knows this, but they will assign you to a pathway of, I don't know, depression, anxiety, gender dysphoria. They never overlap. Oh my gosh, they so rarely overlap. If I'd had any... I did see mental health professionals before. I was like, okay, lol, I'm an NB. But they're like, okay, so you've got depression. It's related to your work, isn't it? I'm like, well, as far as I'm aware, yeah. But hang on, I'm not doing it anymore. But I'm still there. But they never link up. They don't overlap. And this whole thing, it all overlaps. Everything overlaps.
Yeah. Communication between services is very bad. And to make things even worse, if it's on your record, on your medical record, that you're being treated for, I don't know, mood disorders or depression, that can actually make it less likely that you will see a doctor or get hormones, because they will go, well, clearly your dysphoria is just part of your depression, and if we deal with the depression, the dysphoria will go away. So we're not going to let you see a doctor or start hormones in the meantime. So if your depression stems from your dysphoria and not the other way around, that's quite a serious problem.
And that can really hinder any movement forward in trying to help you.
Under 18s, you can't get prescribed hormones.
It's possible to get them possibly at 16, possibly at 17, but only with the permission of both your parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of your parents.
All of your parents, and with the permission, obviously, of two clinicians, which they're very, very unlikely to give you.
Mm. And especially if you're in an LGBTQ-phobic family. Sorry.
Yep. So how young do you think sort of transition options should be available then?
I mean, what you've kind of just asked with that question is, at what age do we give somebody bodily autonomy? The answer there is kind of from birth. Like, transition options for an 8-year-old are not wheeling them into the operating theatre. It's a change in presentation, a change in name, and a change in pronouns. And that's it. Like, people get all up in arms about trans people recruiting kids, and it's complete fabrication. Like, if somebody's 8, it's literally just changing what they wear and changing how you talk to them. Mm. That's it.
And I'm a teacher, as I said. I went through teacher training. Well, going to go through it. And the people who are like, when I say, hi, my name's Jack, guess what my favourite colour is? It's purple, by the way, if you hadn't noticed. I've got a visual impairment, and also just use they, them pronouns, and just call me Jack. Don't call me sir, don't call me miss. Just Jack's absolutely fine. Kids are like, yeah, okay. Teachers are like, I don't understand this. Kids have such, this is why I love teaching. Kids have such a flexibility. They are so happy and, well, I wouldn't say happy. I mean, they're kids. They're, you know, they want to rip your heads off sometimes. But kids are so flexible. They're in that malleable, plastic stage of mental maturity that they are just so accepting. And, like, they don't care. They just don't care. As long as you're just doing, if you're doing them a favour, you know, but kids are the most accepting group of people that I've ever come across, and the younger they get, the more accepting they are.
Yeah, and do you think that comes from the idea of, like, as we grow up, especially through sort of the education system, we're sort of taught how to classify people, whether that's to do with gender or just other sort of classifications as well?
I really think there could be a much bigger effort on the part of the education system to not stress gender binaries from such an early age, and for parents as well, just to say to their kids, just like, buy them a Barbie doll and a truck. Like, why not, you know? If you are able to do so, then why not just say from the outset, right, you're a human being, we love you, go be great, kind of thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then that education should go on throughout your school life of, right, okay, you don't have to be male or female. There isn't this idea of male and female. Be a person. Be nice to people and be great. And I think if that was better implemented and people were allowed, especially children, because they learn so easily and so well and they're so eager to learn, and then just roll with that. Use the natural biological step that we have ahead and kind of encourage the idea that it's okay. It's all okay, really.
And I want to chip in because people are... I can sense something, like something I've had in a previous discussion with a few people about before, is that this idea is great, and I really think it's fantastic that you just remove the binary from children's lives. Well, children's education, at least. But then people are like, but that means you're just getting rid of what's all been here before. It's like, well, no, we're not. Have you looked at the number of very happy, very, very happy and content men and women in the world? Like, cis men and cis women. They're perfectly happy. This is not erasing that. It's allowing people to be, you know what, I'm going to mess with it today. I might be completely the other way around tomorrow or completely disagree with what I said yesterday, but I just want to play with it. I want to play with it. I want to experiment with it. And the more you let people play and experiment at a younger age, the more informed their decision is going to be later on. That's why, I mean, if this had been, if I'd known about this at school, or growing up as a year 9 with no friends, and year 10, 11 and 12, and year 13, go for it. I think I'd be a lot more comfortable now than I ever would have been, because in schools they stress sexuality quite a lot. They never touch on gender, ever. Never, ever touch on gender.
Yeah, my school was very much the same, in that in the PSHE lessons that we did have, you know, the focus was always on cis, hetero people. Like, there was a brief vague mention of some people are lesbians, some people are gay, some people are bisexual. But
this is weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of biphobia in those lessons. Don't listen to them. But they never touched on gender identity at all. Like, it took me until... I'm not kidding. It took me until I was 16 to figure out that, not all girls want to be boys. Not all girls wish that they didn't have boobs. Not all girls feel like this. This is not normal. And there is a word for this, and that word is transgender. Like, it literally took me until then to find that out, because it's not talked about in schools at all.
It's so peculiar that schools are learning to discuss sexuality, and yet I feel like, from my experience, they're completely bypassing gender.
Oh, yeah.
When it's just as important in self-identity.
Yeah.
And they're not linked, just clarify that.
No.
Yeah, but, like, schools always push the binary so hard. Like, you're split by your assigned gender at birth for PE. A lot of the time you're split by it for PSHE lessons. And a thousand tiny little ways, and none of it matters.
Hmm.
Like, literally none of it. None of it needs separating by gender. Like, there is no reason that a bunch of cis boys should not be in the room when you're talking about periods. Because guess what? Cis boys need to know that as well, because otherwise we're going to have a hell of a mess 20 years down the line.
Preach. But no, there's definitely... Oh, that's just brought up so many school memories. It's the way that... I remember my PSE lesson. We had one once where the girls were taken away to talk about menstruation, the boys were taken away to learn how to put a condom on a banana. And it's just like, right, well, why not have one... our lesson and just teach everyone everything.
Because everyone needs to know everything.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And if you think you don't need to know it, like,
there will be a time.
A situation which arises, which you can never, ever foresee, ever. Which is like, I wish I'd listened to that because it's useful now. Or, like, just so many things. It's so close-minded to think that you only need to know about yourself. And even then, they don't tell you how to know yourself properly.
Yeah, I think, so we've discussed about education. I think we've discussed how we weren't taught about sort of gender identities in sort of our education system. So because of this, do you think that now that sort of people are experiencing different gender identities more, especially at university, that people have a responsibility to sort of research about gender, so that sort of people who sort of are non-binary don't have to explain themselves to people who sort of don't really understand what that means?
Yes, please.
I'm really just not sick of it, but there are days which I'm like, you know what, I just want to go home and have a pasty. I don't want to talk about, like, with the whys and wherefores, and where did you decide? When did you decide? I don't care. I'm hungry. Leave me alone. Just the way you greet people. Hi, what's your name? What's your study? What's your pronouns? Done. There you go. That's all you need to know. Because then you know a fair amount of someone to have a good conversation. If you've got the same subject, good conversation about your subject. No one's going to get confused. People know how to refer to you, what to refer to you by. Oh, and it just makes life so much easier. Yeah. I don't feel like a walking dictionary or a walking encyclopedia.
I know it can feel sometimes when you do have to say your pronouns quite a few times over, it can feel like a record or repeat, but I feel like I understand that that's just the system of people haven't been taught that, so that's fine by me. Like, I'm happy to explain myself as long as people will care to listen.
Yes.
Pretty much. Granted, it would be nicer in the future if it's, as you said, if it's a question of, hi, what's your name, what are your pronouns, kind of thing, or something along the lines of that, or at least people not assuming. But that's something we've got to progress into as a society, rather than something that's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I do, as I said, I'm personally happy to talk to people, as long as it's not, as long as no one's malicious and turns around and uses the incorrect pronouns deliberately, then I'm happy to sit and explain to my heart's content about my understanding, my experience and everything.
Yeah, like in an ideal world, people would hear a new thing that they haven't heard before and go off and Google it, you know. But realistically, a lot of people aren't going to do that. I mean, what I think would be quite nice is that if, as part of the, you know how we have like the fire safety talks when you're an incoming fresher, and you have to go to one because otherwise you get yelled at by whoever your head of college is. What would be really great is if they had like a little, I don't know, like a 5 or 10 minute session of, oh, by the way, gender is not binary. Some people use they pronouns. Some people use neopronouns, which are pronouns that aren't he, she, or they. You know, some people use he, him pronouns and walk around in skirts. And all of that is fine. Don't be horrible to people. Like, if we could just have a session like that and, I don't know, give people, like, a little card or a little flyer or something with, like, a list of good resources on it, then you'd have the initial don't be nasty to people covered, and you'd have somewhere that people could go for information if they wanted to know more. And like then you'd have the option of saying to the 20th person to ask you that day, what does non-binary mean? You'd have the option of just saying, look, it's here, go look at this web page. Please stop asking me stupid questions. I just want to go home and have my pasty.
It's all about the pasties. No, I did actually recommend that to the wellbeing community officer, Mia. I don't know whether they actually did use it in the freshers talks. No, they didn't use it in the freshers talks. Right, well, that's something we can get on for next year.
Yeah, that would be great.
Because it's just a 5 minute explanation that's going to make a lot of people feel so much more comfortable.
Yeah. People are scared.
Yeah.
Because it's from, like, you know, deepest, darkest Cornwall, like, you're rarely going to meet anyone who's A, not in a flat cap, or B, who's ever questioned their gender, ever. Yeah, so if you're coming from a place which is really not very diverse, and everything that you've kind of known is kind of, you know, shaken up around you. But for, like, because that's how this community works. You're coming to a bigger community, a wider community, a more diverse community of people who want to learn. I mean, if you don't want to learn, kind of, what are you doing at university? But this is a different environment, and people need to be like, hey, you know what? We have a different environment here. This is how it works. If you want to know more, here you go, resources.
Like, we've been discussing about the university quite a lot, and I think something that's sort of coming into place at the university now is this idea of gender-neutral toilets. So, sort of, what have your thoughts been on that?
Kind of like, this happened to me. Like, this is before I ever started questioning my gender. I just went to the loo in the library. My friend was waiting outside. Because, funnily enough, I needed a wee, so I went to the loo. And someone from the library reception came up and asked my friend, like, oh, did they... Well, they got the wrong pronoun for what I was at the moment, and they just got so confused by someone looking, you know, mildly effeminate, went into the, like, the male bathroom. I'm like, okay, so okay, having that, having the space to be like, you know what, I can just go for a wee now and not worry about being questioned about it. Like, you don't belong here. It's like, do you want to read this form? I don't belong here either. Do you want to read, look at that sign? I don't belong there either. So having the ability to just, you know, do normal bodily functions, like, you know, get rid of the pasty, is something as simple as going to the loo. It should not be... I've stood... You've watched me stand outside, Alex. Like, watch me stand outside the loo for, like, 5 minutes because there's no one there with the key to the accessible toilet, which is gender neutral. And I was like, I can't... I can't do that. It's just such a head spin. I just don't know what to do. And then on top of that, it's like, I really need a wee. And it just makes things so much harder.
Yeah, on the subject of accessible facilities, quite often trans people who either don't pass for cis or trans people who are non-binary or both get told, well, why don't you just use the disabled toilet? Because that's gender neutral. Which, yeah, it is, but that completely misses the point of what it's for. Mm-hmm. Like, disabled toilets are there for people with disabilities. You know? Because, you know, there are grab bars. There's an emergency cord that you can pull if you fall. You know? And all those wonderful things that are really important for someone who has a disability. Like, somebody who's trans and who is completely able-bodied should not be in that bathroom. Because, number one, being trans is not a disability. It doesn't make you disabled. And number two, they're taking those facilities away from somebody who could really, really need them, which is terrible.
I really like that they have gender-neutral toilets in Spring Lane now.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah. They didn't originally.
They didn't originally, but they've changed it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's just because I complained about it, but yeah. I'm going to say it's because a lot of people complained about it. I think for the uni, that's a step in the right direction.
Yes.
Perhaps that could be implemented more widely across campus, but there is the whole thing of it's built differently as a physical room. But then I've been discussing it with people in the past, and they've said, why can't we have a room that's cubicles and a room that's urinals? Because then it's just, you know what? Humans are going to pee. There you go. Like, it doesn't matter what gender you are. Just go into a general room, please. And just don't use the accessible toilets. Because as you said, people are going to need them for that exact reason.
Funny story. The university's policy is that all new buildings will have gender-neutral facilities in addition to accessible facilities and traditional gendered facilities. Hmm. The requirements for gender-neutral toilets are, I think that the walls of the cubicle extend to the floor and extend to the ceiling.
Okay.
Which means that there are some facilities in, like, pre-existing departments that can't be remodeled, like the gendered toilets in chemistry can't be remodeled because, like, the walls of the cubicles don't go to the ceiling or the floor, and it would be prohibitively expensive. But like, where possible, gender neutral facilities should be made available, please.
What's your take on the lounge toilets? Because of course they've got a gender neutral sink, hand wash basin, but it's advertised as gender neutral, and then it's like, oh right, now go your separate ways.
Yeah, don't touch me with your non-binary hands.
Yeah, it's, so far as I know, the ones in the lounge are not gender neutral. No, they're unisex, not. Which is not the same thing,
okay.
But they're often conflated. Because they've got, haven't they got like a dividing wall down the middle?
They've got a W and then an M.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, because I know the first LGBTQ network social I went on there, they said, oh look, it's toilets that are for both people. And it's like, okay, good? No, it's not going to scope a scene. No, because then it still has the signs up inside anyway.
They've made it more confusing by trying to, you know, flirt with the idea of gender neutrality. And they've just made it so much more complicated because then even people who would never have thought about this in the first place, who just then like, hang on, what? This is a confusing layout.
Yeah. It's just badly designed.
Okay, so I think that's sort of all we've got time for today. But I'd like to thank all of you for coming and sort of discussing this and sort of raising awareness about this, especially on campus. I've been your host, Beth Whiffen, and I've been joined by...
Kit Taylor!
Alex Palmer.
And Jack Fellows.
Okay. Thank you all for tuning in.